This season of The Next Step is made possible through a grant provided by Garo and Laura Artinian of Sydney, Australia, in memory of George Samarjan, and by listeners like you. Donate at epostle.net.
Hi, this is Susie with In His Shoes Ministries. Welcome to our seventh year of broadcasting on epostle.net. We welcome you and thank you for making The Next Step with Father Vazgen the premier listening experience about spirituality through Orthodoxy. Here, Father Vazgen provides his unique and distinctive voice for Armenian Orthodoxy, as providing an intelligent and practical answer to the challenges of life, based on the solid principles of love, faith, and hope as expressed by Jesus Christ. And most importantly, you don't have to check your brain in at the door to follow Armadoxy. It's a practical approach to melding spirit and passion in the real world. These shows are produced every week at epostle.net for a vast audience, which includes those who are searching for practical and deeper applications of faith, the disenfranchised members of the church community, and of course the neophyte, those who are discovering truths in ancient Orthodoxy. Our commitment at epostle.net is to provide a medium for apostolic evangelism for an electronic and expanding universe. So turn up the volume and get ready to take the next step.
Hey, this is Father Vasco, priest of the Armenian Church, welcoming you to The Next Step. Episode number 322 of The Next Step, a podcast that puts it all together, that connects the dots, that brings it all together. The most ancient of all Christian traditions, Armenian Orthodoxy, relevant for today? Yeah, it's an Armadoxy walk. And we're asking you to take a next step with us. This podcast is part of the expanding vision of the In His Shoes mission and brought to you by the cool folks at epostle.net. Hey, if you're ready, I know I am. Let's take the next step. Well, hello, and how are you doing? I hope you're doing well. I don't know what kind of mood I'm in today, kind of like a bluesy day. Been thinking about a lot of stuff lately, especially with what's going on. I'm going to be sharing so much with you today, kind of some personal stuff. If you want to know about Father Vazgen, what he's up to, this is probably the episode to find out what's going on. A lot of stuff on my mind. We're getting ready. We're preparing for a trip to go to Armenia and kind of do a second exploration of what we discovered a couple months ago. And as we're doing that this morning, got a bunch of tweets from Armenia, actually, and some news agencies talking about the saber rattling. Azeris are making some noise over there, I guess, while the world's attention is elsewhere, and particularly with the tensions between the U.S. and Russia and, over Ukraine and Crimea, the world attention is elsewhere. And there's this small little area called Armenia that's like the cradle of civilization, and people are not paying attention. Hey, wake up, world. What's going on over there? The Azeris are taking advantage of this situation, and wow, are they making some noise. And so it's disturbing at the very least, but of course the ramifications are great, and got to pay attention to stuff going on over there. And of course that with me, as I've shared with you, my Next Step listeners, we found a pearl over there. And as Christ says, when you find the pearl, the kingdom of God, you leave everything behind and you put everything, all of your resources into obtaining that pearl. Or back in the early 1990s, they're having a field day because they went into some of the most ancient of all lands and destroyed monuments, destroyed beautiful areas. And that was the main news, and everybody seemed to forget about the people. Yeah, I mean, those days, if you remember, they were talking about some of the treasures of Iraq, some of the old areas that needed to be quarantined from war. Isn't that incredible, huh? We don't quarantine war when it hits people, when it destroys people. But hey, some of the treasures. In this case, when I'm looking at Armenia and I see some of the effects of war that it can have over there, especially on some of these treasures that have just come out of ruins. I mean, forget about what people have done to it. Imagine 70 years of communism where they've locked up these areas, these sacred spaces, and made them into museums. And now they're just, they're getting a second life. And people got to leave it alone. Just leave it alone. And that's just not about Armenia. It's about, well, the entire world. Look what's going on in the Middle East. Yeah, Israel, Gaza, talking about Iraq, Syria, Egypt, hey, all over the place. The destruction seems to be, you know, par for the course. And we've got to be talking a different language. Well, I've shared with you a lot of things over the past few weeks, a lot of ideas about that lasting peace. And I hope you will take some time to revisit some of those ideas that we shared with you, because I need a momentum to start on this. We need some momentum for people to start talking in terms of peace, in terms of lasting peace. And these are not just abstract ideas. You know, I was thinking about this a few days ago when I did my TV program. I wanted to talk about theoretical religion as opposed to practical religion. And they are two different camps. They are two different worlds. A lot of times we talk about theories, faith, hope, and love. We talk about lasting peace. Theories, right? Have we seen lasting peace? And then you get to the practical. Well, we don't even have peace with our own people, you know, with our own family members, husbands and wives, children and parents and their siblings, and just all kinds of things. I guess that's the aunts and uncles, right? Anyway, how can we make this work? How can we take religion and make it practical? That's the essence of what we do here in the next step. That's what Armadoxy is all about. What is Christ talking about when he's talking about love? What is he talking about when he says have faith and you could move mountains? Well, there's possibilities there, right? And he's not, it's just, it can't be left in the abstract world. It has to be concrete. And I was thinking about this a few days ago in preparation for my TV show. You know, it's the same in science, right? There's theoretical science. There's theoretical physics, for instance. And then there's practical, applied physics. Well, the same is true in religion. Theoretical physics talks about let's take something very common, the speed of light. You turn on a light, and that light reaches you at a rate of 186,000. Miles a second, okay? And they know things like this. They've done measuring. They've been able to shoot a laser beam up to a mirror up on the moon, and the light comes back. I think it's, what is it? The moon is like a half a light second away from us, so it takes one and a half seconds for the light to come back to us. And so they're able to measure the speed of light, and they quantify it. But theoretically, No one has been able to reach that speed. So when we talk about time travel, it's still in the theory mode, right? What happens? Albert Einstein's ideas about time and relevance and about time stopping, it's still very much theory. And when you get to quantum physics and you look at the very smallest particles of life, of particles of the universe, and you say, well, it is all theory. So how do you apply that to practical life, to real life? Hey, well, you've got to build a bridge. You've got to build your highways. You've got to build a building, a house, okay? And so you need physics to figure out, you know, the tensions and the laws that are going to govern it. You don't want to build a bridge and then have no support on it, and all of a sudden gravity pulls it down. Okay, so at some point that theory becomes real. In the same way, in religion, you have these ideas of faith, hope, and love. And certainly Jesus does a good job of presenting this to us in a very real sense. And that's why he has the parables. Those are the real sense, the way of putting it into practical terms. The prodigal son, right? Okay, well, what does love mean? Okay, here's a father who's basically his whole investment is in his children, and his child moves away. And yet he takes that child back despite all the difficulties he's had, despite all the hurt and the pain and the sting. Okay, despite the sting, he still has love in his heart. So Christ challenges us to really apply that faith to our lives, that faith with a capital F, the religion. I don't like using the word religion. I guess you know that. It's kind of like connotes all kinds of difficult things. People have a difficulty with it, but that's what it is. It's a religion, okay? And when you apply it to your practical life, that's when it has a value. This is what the problem is that we're seeing throughout the world. People bombing people. You know, you get into this idea of using human shields. How could you do that in the name of religion? How could you bomb somebody in the name of religion? How could you orchestrate terrorism in the name of religion? Well, people have done it for years. People have done it for centuries. People have justified war, have justified the violence. You put children in front of bombs. I mean, that's absurd. That's absurd. Okay? And somehow people have found a way of justifying it. It's impossible to justify. Putting a human in front of a bomb, let alone putting a child. And yet, we see it over and over in the news that's being brought to us day in and day out. In a few minutes, I'm going to talk about something very personal to me. But before we do that, I thought I would just share with you an article that appears in Wired magazine. It's on the front cover. It's talking about smartphones and how they have changed our life. And it's an interesting read. I'll see if I could put a link on today's show notes. I don't know if Wired magazine makes their recent copy available like that, but I will put a link on today's show notes about it. But they talk about the creativity that is made possible now because of these small devices, these devices that most every one of us holds and we're glued to it. Our heads are pointed down as we walk, as we talk, as we drive, because we're looking at the latest feeds that are coming into us. They're making instant access to the world possible, okay? You have instant access. And, you know, I don't want to go into all of that stuff, but it's always fun to remember. You know, we grew up having one phone in the house. And if you were expecting a call, you all jumped up to get that call and you'd fight over the phone and the rights and the time for that phone to speak on that phone. And of course, if you weren't expecting a call, you'd just hang loose. Who cares? You know, who cares against the phone? Now, you know, phones are not only in everyone's hand, and families have family plans, so everybody has a phone and a phone number. But now you have that mystery of the phone life, okay? So you can follow just about anything you want. Like, for instance, this morning I got like text after text coming in from Armenia. And here I am sitting in California in the Los Angeles area, and I'm basically up to date with what's going on in Armenia. And the same is true for people on the stock market. You're sitting somewhere in Arizona, in Nevada, and you're able to see what's going on in New York instantaneously and make your decisions. Health-wise, okay, think about the modern miracles that we have because of our smartphones. And it's an interesting article, but at the very, very, very least, it is also creating an anxiety among us because we are overwhelmed with the amount of information that is being pushed in our face. If you've signed up for any new feed or what is it? Even if a new app, right? One of the first questions it asks you, should we allow a push feed? Should we allow this app to give you regular updates of what's going on? You put on a map app. I was trying to figure out how to say that. You put a map app on your phone, and immediately it asks you, well, do you want to allow me, the app, to know where you're at? Well, of course I do. Otherwise, what good is a map if you don't know where I am? How are you going to show me where the next place is? Well, what good is a map? You know, we used to fold it out. And okay, yeah, granddaddy over here, we were sitting here with the foldable maps. And then there was a book about how to fold a map because you weren't able to fold it. Now you just click the button and it's basically folded for you. It's gone. So a lot of our life is really being molded and formed by the use of technology all around us. And you can argue with it and you can say, oh yeah, I remember, I love the folded map. But you know what? There is a reality to it. It is just so simple. It is more cost effective. If you use these products, of course, if you don't, I see so many people, you know, who will load up a phone, who will pay exorbitant prices to have these phones, and basically they're using it as a phone, which is nice. You should use it as a phone. It should function as a phone. That's what it is, first and foremost. But for most people, and I think this article makes point of that, is that for most people, it's not a phone. It's really your connection with the world. And so, just some thoughts out there, okay? We're going to go to the song of the day, and then I'm going to come back to you with something very personal, okay? I'm going to come out. How's that? Yeah, in just a minute. Oh, yeah, you'll have to wait. Listen, I haven't played John Bilizikchan for you in a long, long time. How about a little bit of Bilizikchan music? Thank you. John Bilezikchin's playing Rondo for the Oud. Imagine that. He's put that together, right? That is off of, I said Oud Artistry, it is Art of the Oud album. And we will have a link on our show notes today so you can check out not only this song, but all of his great music.
Stand to fly. I'm not that naive. I'm just out to find the better part of me. I'm more than a bird. I'm more than a plane. I'm more than some pretty face.
We're gonna come out
beside a train and it's not.
And, well, some of you know this side of me, but let me share it with all of you. And it occurred to me, right about when I got back from Armenia about a month ago, I'm different from most priests, and there is something that you should know. Back in 1980, when I was first called into a parish. It was at the St. James Church in Los Angeles. I was called to be the assistant pastor over there. And the archbishop at the time had called me up and he said, "We're going to be putting together a press release and we need a picture of you." Now, up until then, I had not worn a collar. Okay, and I needed a picture with one of those collars. So I had a clergy shirt. Actually, to tell you the truth, I had a collection of clergy shirts. And this was given to me by a friend who was about a year or two ahead of me in seminary. And at some point he realized he wasn't going to pursue this line of ministry and he wasn't going to become a priest. And as he came out of the seminary, he had a collection of these shirts, all radical colors, you know, different colors, but he did have a couple black ones, and he gave them all to me. It was very, very thoughtful of him. I mean, after all, they are these shirts that button up at the top, and they have that little special place where you put that plastic collar in there, okay, the plastic little white thing. And you really can't do much else with these shirts. You can't put a tie on them. You can't use them elsewhere. So he gave me these shirts. And like I said, very thoughtful of him. And I used them for several years. I didn't use the colors. If you know me, I'm pretty much into the basic black. And anyway, I had this shirt. So I needed a picture for the press release. And as was the case in those days, living at home, I would walk around in my underwear. And, that's the part that's coming out, okay? So I asked my mom. She had a Polaroid camera. I said, "Mom, would you take a picture of me?" And I put the collar on. I put the shirt on with the collar and wore a jacket over. And I said, "Mom, be careful. Don't take any pictures below the waist, okay? We want to keep it up." And obviously, being my mom, she didn't want to take a picture beyond my top. She was furious. Why was I doing this, okay? She wanted her son to look like a priest. Anyway, we took a picture. And it is the picture that I used for a few times. It was in press releases that here is the new deacon who is going to be the assistant pastor at St. James. Okay, so that is the picture. That is what I wanted to come out in. But I'm going to come out a little bit more too, okay? It's bothered me all these years because I've never really enjoyed that collar. I've never really enjoyed wearing that collar. It's kind of choking, and I'm talking metaphorically as well as practically. Okay, there we go. Theoretical and practical applied religion, right? Okay, it is choking, and it is choking in many ways because when you wear that collar, it's a piece of plastic. That's what it is. It's a piece of plastic. And somehow we've adopted that from other religions, saying that this is the uniform of the priest. And so the priest has to wear this collar. Okay, this is the uniform. It's not Armenian. There's nothing Armenian Orthodox about it. In fact, the garb of the Armenian priest is basically the black robe, what we call the enteri, the robe that goes on underneath. Basically, that's his clothes. And then the verargu is the robe that comes on top of it. And so there's all assortment of robes. But basically, it's a black material. There is no such thing as the collar in Orthodoxy. But we've adopted that because, hey, it looks cool, you know. It identifies us as clergy. And certainly, it's gotten me into some great places, you know. When somebody is suffering and you need to get into a hospital, it's usually for family alone and members of the clergy. And by wearing that collar, you automatically are identified as a member of the clergy, and you're able to get in there and offer the help and offer the comfort that is so necessary at those times. So I haven't shied away from wearing that collar, but I've never really enjoyed it. Never really enjoyed it, because on top of everything else, not only does it choke your throat, but it chokes who you are. It chokes the person that you are. People shy away. They're not honest. They're not truthful when they see you with the collar, okay? They'll come up to you and they'll say, oh, you're a priest now. So all of a sudden, their vocabulary changes too. Not that I enjoy cursing or anything, but all of a sudden you notice that they are in a different mode. And you say, well, you know, if I'm the servant of Christ, don't you want these people to be honest with you and just relaxed with you? And instead, their guards are up because you've been identified as a priest. And it always bothers me. It continues to bother me to walk into some place with that collar on. And so it was very unusual when I thought about that picture some 30, 35 years ago. We took that picture, and basically I was uncomfortable then, to the point that, you know, okay, let's put the shirt on, take the picture, get done with it, be done with it. And I'll put if I could find that picture, I know it's somewhere in my files, we'll scan it. I'll put it up on the show notes today so you can see what I'm talking about. Now, when I got back from Armenia this time, I've been to Armenia three times. Once back in 1977 as a seminarian, where I stayed there and I lived there at Holy Etchmiadzin. And when I returned, one of the shows that I was really intrigued with, and I'm sure many of you remember, if not, I honestly will suggest, if I doubt it's on Netflix, but do go get the DVDs. It is a show called Kung Fu. And it traces the story of a monk, a priest in the West. He's a monk who came out of China from the Shaolin tradition of Kung Fu. And it was played by David Carradine. And one of the cool things that he had was these tattoos on his arm. And the way he received those tattoos is he had to, as the ultimate test, he had to pick up this big pot of coal with his bare hands, and the imprint of the dragon would come on his arm as a result of picking that up. It would be burned into his arm. And I thought, wow, you know, there you go. There's permanence. There's no plastic collar there. There's no shirt that you can take off. It is a permanent fixture on there. And I thought about that in terms of me and Etchmiadzin, myself and my ministry. I wanted a permanence because the things that I do believe in are not things that you can take off as a shirt. They're not a plastic religion. They're not a plastic faith. It is very real. I never wanted to be that priest that was plastic. In other words, you're always a priest, okay? You're always a priest. And as a priest, you are a human being. You have emotions. You have all kinds of desires. You have feelings. You have movement in your body. And that movement is defined by the externals around you. So when you hear music, you have to dance. You know, I love dancing. I loved Armenian dancing. I've taught Armenian dancing. And, you know, some people would come up, oh, a priest is dancing. Well, yeah, shouldn't a priest be dancing? Shouldn't a priest be laughing, enjoying what God has given? I mean, shouldn't a priest be the ultimate example? And that collar has always been a hindrance to that life. And then all of a sudden you wake up and you say, wait, I want something more permanent. And certainly those kung fu markings, the dragon on the arm, hey, that is as permanent as you get. And so when I returned from Armenia as a student, I thought to myself, this would be really cool. Let's get a tattoo of a big E for etchmiadzin on your arm. And, one thing led to another, and I never got it done. But it's always been in the back of my mind. Back in 1993, I decided, it was my 37th birthday, and I decided, you know what would look cool on me? Yeah, what would look cool? Let's get an earring. So I got my ears pierced. My wife gave it to me for my 37th birthday. She pierced my ear, and I put an earring in there, and I wore it. Well, you had to, right? I can't remember what it was. For a month, 2 months, you have to wear it, so the hole stays permanent. And, you should have seen what happened. Jeez, people were up in arms over this small bit of jewelry that the priest is wearing. Now, it doesn't matter all the things that they're engaged in, but whoa, wait till the priest is wearing an earring. I even got some guy call me. Okay, some guy called me, an anonymous call, and he said, you know, it is not befitting an Armenian man to be wearing an earring. I said, what? I didn't know this. Well, and what's not befitting? An Armenian man, he says, has to be masculine, and an earring takes away, detracts from that masculinity, that manhood. And I said, well, this is an interesting conversation, and you are... He says, it doesn't matter who I am. I says, well, it does. He says, I don't want to give my name. Never forget that conversation. I even remember where I was sitting when he called me. And I said, well, I appreciate these comments that you have with me, but tell me the manhood, tell me the masculinity in your anonymity. You don't want to give your name. I mean, what kind of man is that, that he doesn't even care about what he's saying? To the point that he's not even willing to put his name to it. And you're going to tell me how to live, how to do it. Well, needless to say, it blew over. I got some reprimand from up above, too, you know. But I still got an earring. I still got an ear pierced. And from occasion to occasion, I don't regularly wear it. But there are days that I feel like wearing it. And why? Because I'm human. I'm a person. And it lets me understand, really, a lot more than a plastic collar would let me understand. Okay, that being said, I went to Armenia back in 2009 with my son, Vadojan, and we had just an incredible few weeks over there. We lived at the monastery, and when I got back, I said, okay, this is the time. Let's get the tattoo. Let's get an imprint on you that makes it more permanent. And I didn't. Well, this last time coming back from the pilgrimage, and it was the opportune time, and I didn't hesitate this time. And instead of the air, what I got was a beautiful cross with the air in the middle, and it sort of made it worth the wait. It is a bit of permanence. In other words, you can't take it off. I guess there are ways of taking it off, but it's not easy. It's not as easy as taking off a shirt, but it does give that permanence, and it was something that is necessary at this point in my life, to understand that the priesthood is part and parcel of me, and there are people who play around with it, who want to put all of their prejudices into the word priest and what it means. Their prejudices in the sense that, not good or bad, but basically their preconceived notions of what the priest should be. And there are people who will basically be a priest when they get the shirt on and will take it off and not be a priest. But the permanence factor is important, that you're always a priest, even when you're doing the things that, quote unquote, are not priestly. Okay, and it's important for me, because at the end of the day, you have to feel comfortable with the things that you've done. And so this permanence is now on my arm. I'll share a picture of that as well. I wanted to come out. I wanted to tell you that I just don't like the plastic collar. There's nothing plastic about it. In my office, I have a bobblehead Jesus. And it is, you know what those bobbleheads are, right? The heads on a spring. And I had seen this many years ago, and it says, I don't believe in a plastic Jesus. And I put that up as a reminder to me all the time that Christ is not something plastic. Christ's message is not something that you can remove as easily as taking off a collar, a tattoo, is permanent. And it was something necessary as a reminder for me that what we're doing over here, the mission that we have, can't be compromised by what people think, what people want to believe a priest is, what their notions are. You've been ordered to follow him. So following him is a difficult path. It's not easy. There are ups and downs daily temptations, daily opportunities for you to fall into what is called sin, basically not be perfect. And that's not what a priest is. A priest is not someone who's perfect. A priest is somebody who is, with the imperfections, has been called to do a very special job, a special work in his life. And so from time to time, whether it's getting a tattoo, whether it's reflecting on a picture, whether it's thinking about a plastic collar, it's an opportunity for us to rededicate ourselves to the notion of what we're about, why we're here. And so today, I wanted to share with you, my closest people, my Next Step listeners, a little coming out party for me. I don't like plastic collars. Yes, that picture was taken in my underwear. And yes, I do have a tattoo. And from occasion to occasion, you may see an earring on me. But that's life, you know? That's what we get along with. And I've come out. I've told you about it. I know, you expected so much more. You may have expected like some wild things. Anyway, this is as wild as you get today. I'm going to tell you something really wild now. I had forgotten about this, but Impregnation Day is now over. You basically have one more day. Probably today would be a legitimate time, but Impregnation Day, okay? What is this all about? If you're going to get pregnant, this would be the time to get pregnant, okay? Yeah. I told you it's going to be a little bit wild right now. Well, when we were in Armenia, we were talking to somebody, and he was on the trip to Western Armenia with us, and he was actually the mayor of Abaran. And he had joined us because he found out that we were going to be going out to Western Armenia, and he got a spot on our bus, and he came with us. And he told us about an interesting idea that's floating around in Armenia. And it was the idea that, hey, you want to do something for the 100th anniversary of the Armenian Genocide? How about having children on April 24th? Wow. Oh, what a great idea. Okay, Turks, you tried to kill us. Now look. We're repopulating the earth with Armenians. And what a beautiful idea. He was advocating for families to have another child on April 24th. So I did the calculation, and basically we're out of time right now. But I wish I had remembered this a couple weeks ago, and I could have shared it with you back then. But July 24th would have been the deadline for the nine-month incubation period, okay? That would have been the deadline. But actually, if you think about it right now, you can still go full term. And maybe if you're lucky enough, you know, the baby will come out on April 24th. Because, you know, it's okay to come out 2 weeks earlier, 2 weeks after, right? Don't they tell you that there's no magic science in predicting the day of delivery, unless you're going to be C-sectioned. But this is it. So today, this is the day.
Never been a sinner, I never sin. I got a friend in Jesus. So you know that when I die, He's gonna set me up with the Spirit in the sky. Oh, set me up with the Spirit in the sky.
Okay, are you having fun? Yet? Are you having fun over there? Anyway, I hope you enjoyed today's show. Here's Susie to tell you how you can get involved with this enjoyable show.
Thanks, Father Vosgen. Hi, this is Susie once again to thank you for your heartfelt prayers and support for this ministry. Since 2008, we have been broadcasting every week and distributing these broadcasts free of charge. We are now in the seventh year of broadcasting and heard on 6 continents. The next step is entering homes and communities proclaiming God's message of love, forgiveness, and compassion. Please consider partnering in this dynamic ministry by making a contribution today. By pressing on the donate button on our website, you can set up automatic donations either weekly, monthly, or annually. Your donation goes a long way in furthering this ministry. Even more, tell your friends and family by sharing the Next Step link or website with them. We look forward to your participation and words of encouragement. Write to us 24/7 at feedback@epostle.net. This is Susie wishing you all of God's blessings in your life. We now return to the Next Step with Father Voskin.
Well, thank you, Susie, and thank you to all of you. I want to, first of all, thank you for the wonderful response we've received to the last few episodes of The Next Step as we've started our seventh year of podcasting. And we are consistent every week. We come out with this, and now we've got a record. What are we at now? 322. We are 322. I want to thank you for all of your responses. I want to thank you especially for making my breast cancer walk a success. I am now past the limit. I was at the limit. Now I'm past the collection limit, so I am officially registered and ready to walk. Needed $1,800, and I got that and a little bit more. And I want to thank you all for participating in that. You'll be hearing from me very, very soon. But there are other people on our team who can use the support if you're interested. I will put a link on our show notes. You can go to Team In Her Shoes, and we'll be walking next month, September 6th and 7th, 39.3 miles out in Santa Barbara to bring attention and an end to breast cancer, the fight against breast cancer. And we want you to be part of that. You can get involved over there. And of course, get involved with Epostle. This is a ministry that belongs to all of us. It reaches out into places that we never imagined when we started 7 years ago. You know, when we started this, nobody thought that on the other side of the globe, people would be listening to us, but they are listening and the response is overwhelming. So I want to thank you all for making The Next Step what it is right now, and invite you to be a participant financially, be a participant with your donation, and most importantly, as I always say, be a participant with your prayers. It's a simple thing. Remember The Next Step. Remember me, Susie, Ken. Remember this group of people that get together every week to bring this broadcast to you. And those prayers go a long, long way. We are at the end of today's show. I want to thank you for joining us. It's kind of a fun show, a little bit different. I hope you enjoyed it as much as we enjoyed producing it for you. Do get involved with us during the week. We are on Facebook. You could follow me, epostle.net, Susie, all kinds of stuff that's going on Facebook. And of course, at our website, epostle.net, where you can find all kinds of stuff. And the entire collection of The Next Step from time zero till right now. Do check it out. Hey, for the wonderful crew who put today's show together, for Susie, our producer, Vahe, our webman, and Ken, our engineer, this is Father Voskin inviting you to join us again next week as we take The Next Step.
And now here's the fine print.
The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with The Next Step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, The Next Step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskulledness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of epostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
Off balloon top visits.